So thank you so much, and thanks to all of you who have donated today to help keep the station on the air. And we've got one more minute. We've got BBC World News coming up at 1 minute after the hour. It is 8 o'clock in South Central Wisconsin. And once again, the number to call is 608-256-2001, or you can go to WORTFM.org. This is Peter Haney saying, Carol, thank you.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Yes, and thanks to all of you who have donated, and we'll see you on the back porch next week.
Hello, I'm Eileen McHugh with the BBC News. Ukraine and its allies have condemned President Trump's decision to suspend all military aid to Kyiv, but Russia has praised the move. The Ukrainian Prime Minister said the army had the means to hold its positions despite the suspension, and Kyiv was willing to continue to work with Washington. The Kremlin described the US move as the best contribution to what it called the cause of peace. The Americans have said Ukraine must be ready to give up territory, but have made no concrete demands on Moscow. Jonathan Beale has more details.
If you look at sort of some of the key bits of equipment, what Western officials would call the cream, the high-end stuff, that has come from the US. It hasn't really come from Europe. So we're talking about Patriot air defense batteries. Europe has supplied some of those to Ukraine, but of course they are American kits. So the other question that we've got to ask is, is America going to stop Europe buying American kit and then giving it to Ukraine? Because that would really be very, very painful.
The head of the European Commission has presented plans to mobilise more than $800 billion over the coming years to increase Europe's defence spending and support for Ukraine. Speaking in Brussels, Ursula von der Leyen said the Union was prepared to take more responsibility for its own security.
Europe is ready to assume its responsibilities. Rearm Europe could mobilize close to 800 billion euros of defense expenditures for a safe and resilient Europe. We will, of course, continue working closely with our partners in NATO. This is a moment for Europe, and we are ready to step up.
She's also proposed relaxing EU fiscal rules to allow nations to borrow more for defense. Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum, says there's no justification for U.S. tariffs imposed on Mexican imports by President Trump. She said she would announce retaliatory measures on Sunday. Earlier, China and Canada also imposed retaliatory tariffs. With more details, here's Dashini David.
What we do know is that when you fire these kind of shots in a trade war, it tends to have very serious impacts, right? So what you're looking at the moment is the highest tariffs on American consumers since the 1930s, right? China doesn't actually sell that much compared to its income to America, so it can actually afford to flex those muscles a bit more. Does that mean we're going to see President Trump getting even more irate and firing even more shots than this? Quite possibly.
Leaders from Arab countries meeting in Cairo for an emergency summit to reconstruct Gaza without displacing its people have revealed details of their final communique. They have endorsed a plan to build initially 200,000 new homes at a cost of $20 billion. The plan also calls for elections in all Palestinian territories within a year. BBC News. At least 53 people are reported to have died from an unknown disease in the northwest of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The illness appears to claim lives within a day of symptoms appearing, and Soy reports.
The deaths are known to have occurred in February at a village in Basankusa, Equatorial Province. Samples tested negative for Ebola and Marburg viruses. However, half of the cases were positive for malaria. Experts are now investigating if it was a rapid onset of bacterial meningitis in a context where other illnesses like malaria are common. They've also collected water and other environmental samples to check for possible chemical poisoning. The most recent death was reported on the 22nd of last month. Deaths occurred among all age groups, but particularly affected adolescent boys and young men.
Germany is suspending aid to Rwanda over its apparent involvement in the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Berlin has condemned a recent offensive by M23 rebels, calling it a violation of the DRC's territorial integrity and sovereignty. The group has seized key territory in the mineral-rich eastern Congo, including the cities of Goma and Bukavu in recent weeks. Rwanda continues to deny its backing the rebels. The opposition in Serbia have thrown smoke grenades and tear gas inside parliament in support of protesting students. Two lawmakers have been injured. One is said to be in critical condition after suffering a stroke. The demonstration in the chamber was prompted by ongoing student-led anti-corruption protests. The British Antarctic Survey says the world's biggest iceberg appears to have run aground near the island of South Georgia, having broken away from Antarctica in 1986. The mega iceberg, weighing nearly a trillion tons, remained grounded on a seabed for more than 30 years. It started drifting towards South Georgia in 2020. BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
Support for this program comes from Edgewood College Theater, presenting Kimberly Bellflower's biting, funny new play, John Proctor is the Villain, directed by Jeannie Leap, February 28th to March 8th at the Diane Bullwig Theater. At a rural high school in Georgia, teens are studying the crucible while navigating love, sex, and school scandals. Holding a contemporary lens to the American classic, they question who is really the hero and what is the truth, discovering their own power in the process. Tickets at edgewood.edu/about/events/theater or search Edgewood College Theater.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
Bon dia, Madison. The Hanfibians are proud to present Madison Carnival 2025, Saturday, March 8th, live at the Majestic Theater.
Join us as we celebrate 25 years of Carnival in Madison with an evening of Brazilian drumming, dance, and culture.
The night will showcase the vibrant rhythms of the Hanfibians community bateria and the high-energy performances by Ochimo Dance and Madison Capoeira.
The event will also feature performances by bands from our samba community. Grupo Balança, Samba Novistas, Madison Choro Ensemble, Saideira Pagode, and more.
That's the Madison Carnival 25th anniversary, March 8th at the Majestic Theater.
More information at madisoncarnival.com.
Bringing you the rich culture and music of Brazil, this is WORT Madison.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 Madison. Listener sponsored community radio.
The People's Station.
No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice!
No peace! No, I say you've been misled. You've been had. You've been took.
Man, listen, this is 2023, and we swinging chairs. I am not my ancestors, B.
Good morning, Madison.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
morning. It's 8:10 and you're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm Shelly Pittman, filling in for your regular host, Tara Wilhelmi. Tara, who is stuck in an airport, but in the past few weeks or month, she's been doing some excellent interviews, pre-recorded, highlighting entrepreneurs, and we're going to talk about that more a little later in the show. John Miner is our engineer, and he's fresh off the plane. He found time to dress up for Mardi Gras, though, which is today. Happy Fat Tuesday. Also dressed up and vibing with me here in the studio is Kathy Miner. Hey, Kathy.
Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning. Kathy is our receptionist every Tuesday morning, and she and John are both bringing all the color to us this morning. Kathy, what are you doing for Fat Tuesday?
Well, first of all, I'm all dressed up in purple and yellow and green because that's appropriate. Both John and I have jester hats on. And it was a bit of a challenge to fit the headphones on over the jester hat.
You look great.
But we worked it out. That's right. Luckily, it's not a hat with bells on it. That might be annoying in the microphone.
I think John's has those.
No, I got a new jester hat.
Oh, how many do you have at home?
Only two, actually. But the other one didn't fit very well. So some nice person who's sitting in the studio over there made me a new one.
And I do have a little packet of bells at home in my sewing drawer, so if bells are needed on the hats, that could be arranged.
Kathy, did you sew your hats this morning?
Yes.
Wow, that's incredible. I assumed they were store-bought, but silly me. I wanted you to join us this morning. So you're our receptionist. You're our phone answerer this morning as well, along with Cynthia, because it is the WORT Winter Fundraiser, and we're going to tell you about that in a few minutes. But I wanted you to just talk about what you do every Tuesday morning. Come down here. You listen to Tara's shows. Tell us why you've been doing this for a while.
Well, we are actually a family of which three generations have been on WORT, so that's really fun. But I was thinking during the intro about how many years I've been listening to that particular Tuesday morning intro. What I do now is I pull the 8 to 11 a.m. reception desk shift on Tuesdays, yeah, which is to say in the door before 8 o'clock and making the coffee. And then as the phone rings, it's answered. As the doorbell rings, it gets answered.
Yeah.
Just whatever happens. And it's one of the best volunteer gigs in the world.
Oh, that's fun. And how long have you been doing that?
Not 5 years at least. I haven't really counted.
Okay.
But John's been engineering the show for a whole lot longer than that.
I was going to say that intro is still labeled, well, if we could find the mini disc, which probably is around here somewhere, but is still labeled the new Stan's new intro that he and I made in, I think, 2002 or so. Actually, we made it before that because we added in the bit of Gene Park saying, "Good morning, Madison," which is from the show on September 11th, 2001. So it was the new intro from 2000-ish that we made. So,
well, this show has had a couple different hosts, and it has a long history and legacy, but it also has kind of a wide network of community support, and in particular, family support from John Miner and Kathy Miner. And I just want to thank you both for being so reliable and here in the morning each and every Tuesday, or most each and every Tuesday. And Kathy, I just want to say thank you. You're an Evergreen donor. Why do you support WORT?
We are because, you know, we seem to say this every year almost, that now more than ever, we need sources of news and sources of programming that are really from the community, that are not engineered by some corporate interest of some kind and bought and paid for. So we really feel it's so important, and we've been donors for quite a long time and then decided to become Evergreen because we know it's the best way to support the station. You have a reliable income, and you know what's coming in every month.
Absolutely. Well, a third of our donors are Evergreen or monthly donors, and it's a really helpful way for us to plan our budget and make so many decisions at WORT. One of the special calls out we're trying to make this drive is to our lapsed donors. And actually, I was wondering why I had a weird connection with that word, and I finally realized yesterday, oh, lapsed Catholic. That's why that's an odd word for me to hear. But anyway, if you are lapsed in your support for WORT, what an appropriate day to bring that up.
I was going to say, speaking of speaking of Mardi Gras and Lent and things like that,
yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, if you are lapsed, if you haven't given in the last 18 months to WORT, then we would, we have some special news for you. Someone's taking a picture of me right now. Hi, Carol. I don't look good in this shirt, but dress for radio.
But the beads are good,
yeah,
Shelley.
Yeah, that's, there you go. What was I going to say? Oh, our lapsed donors, we are specially targeting you and saying that your donation is doubled when you sign up again to become an Evergreen donor or just a pledge donor. We're really trying to get new donors. But the beauty of Evergreen donors is that there is no missing support because it just comes out of whatever account that you have set up every month. You don't have to think about it, and your support goes straight to WORT. So there are multiple ways to become a WORT donor. You can call Kathy and Cynthia at 608-256-2001 and pledge your support. We have a variety of thank you gifts available, or you can go online to wortfm.org/donate, and we're going to talk a little more about those thank you gifts and the mechanics. But first, I just want to say thank you, Kathy, and I'll let you go answer phone, because I'm sure they're just rolling in at 8:16 this morning. But coming up, I want to say that later in the show, we'll be speaking with Rachel O'Leary Carmona. She's the executive director of the Women's March, and that's ahead of a rally today at the state capitol. They'll be there to talk about how reproductive rights are again on the line with the upcoming state Supreme Court race. Kathy, it looks like you want to say something.
And Shelley, I've got a little input about that.
Yeah.
One of the other things I do is I'm part of the Raging Grannies, whom you may have seen or heard either on WORT or on Street Corners, and we will be part of that rally this afternoon.
Man, you're just really busy lately.
I'm going to pin a few buttons on this jester hat, and it will become my Mardi Gras granny hat for today.
Okay, well, thank you for all the singing that you do as part of the Raging Grannies. But coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk with some other folks about a bill in the state capitol. So we're going to listen to a little music, and then we'll be joined by Reverend Carrie Parker. She's executive director of the Wisconsin Council of Churches, one of a handful of organizations opposing a bill in the state legislature. Let's get to a little music and then go to Reverend Parker. It's 8:17. You're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz.
Wow, what's happening? It's your boy, Biggie Fresh. Big Frida, D1, and Galactic, NOLA, baby. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah, you know I'm about to flow. D1 about to go off. Man, you ain't from New Orleans if you never had a snowball. And you ain't from New Orleans if you don't be dragging your baby. You heard me? Believe that wine's all bread. They gotta have soul around here. We don't feel it. Cause it's the place where even white people got rhythm. And you ain't from New Orleans if you can't finish this saying. 1825's
crawfish heads all over the lawn. Got all my girlfriends tattooed on my arm. My first wife, baby mama at the same church. My boo thing love it cause we put the turn first. They love it when I say babe, so I say babe. Next thing I know, shorty trying to have my babe. You say you think I'm crazy? I say I know you're crazy. You just met me and you trying to have a boy, baby.
Act like you know.
You better know.
It's 8:18. You're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. 608-256-2001. That's the number to call. Or pledge online, donate online at wortfm.org. And we do have our first donor this morning. We want to thank Kate from Madison, who donated for the new slick WORT long sleeve t-shirt in black. Lovely. It's a very special, specific to this drive t-shirt. And Kate says, love Tara's interviews and all the inclusivity. Rich Samuel's pledge hour last Friday a.m. was well done, helpful, and different. So we got folks pledging for both classical and the news and information you hear on the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz and all the 8 o'clock buzz shows. So thank you again, Kate from Madison. Keep those donations coming in support of Tara, our fabulous host, Tara, who's been talking with all sorts of different entrepreneurs over the last couple of weeks and really getting into taping out in the community and then bringing that back to WORT, which I think is really cool. It's moving on to our next topic, though. A bill in the state capitol would require that all sheriffs across Wisconsin cooperate with ICE. Not only would that mandate that county sheriffs in Wisconsin request proof of legal presence from individuals held in county jails for felony offenses, it would also require sheriffs comply with retainers and administrative warrants received from the Federal Department of Homeland Security or face a hefty price. Now, in 3 minutes, we'll be speaking with a guest who opposes the bill. But first, WORT reporter Shayna Clark was on the beat last Friday and has this report.
The bill would require sheriffs to comply with detainers and administrative warrants issued by Homeland Security. It would also require sheriffs to request documentation. That means anyone being held in a county jail on a felony charge would have to provide documents like a passport, birth certificate, or naturalization certificate. And it requires certain reporting requirements to the legislature and State Department of Justice. Assembly Bill 24 was introduced earlier this month. More than 36 Republicans have signed on, saying it would ensure public safety. No Democrats have signed on to the bill, which is expressly targeted at the sheriffs of Dane and Milwaukee counties, so says Assembly Leader Robin Voss, who said during a public hearing last week that he believes in local control. But
I think anybody who is close to Milwaukee would say, wow, people are going to quickly realize that there are no consequences for having things happen. That means those of us who go into Milwaukee, who go into Dane County, are also going to be at risk if we work there, if we go to a restaurant, if we, you know, take our kids to school, whatever it would be. Well, that's unacceptable for me. So it is a rare thing that I would support this kind of mandate, but they've really given us no choice.
The bill also proposes a steep penalty for Dane and Milwaukee counties if their sheriffs don't comply, a 15% reduction in shared revenue, the money sent back from the state to local governments. In Dane County, that translates to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Two organizations representing sheriffs and deputy sheriffs across Wisconsin endorsed the bill, but they still listed concerns in a public statement, saying that immigration enforcement is fundamentally a federal issue and raising concerns of an unfunded mandate. 8 organizations had registered against the bill as of last Friday. Among them, Voces de la Frontera Action, United Migrant Opportunity Services, and the ACLU of Wisconsin, where Amanda Merkway is advocacy director. She says the bill would force law enforcement into becoming tools of mass deportation.
Right now, we're seeing some very aggressive rhetoric and policies being changed at the federal level. And a bill like this could have really sweeping impacts for immigrant communities, but also, you know, all residents of Wisconsin.
A 2024 report from ICE lists Dane and Milwaukee counties among hundreds of, quote, non-cooperative institutions throughout the country. Still, of Wisconsin's 72 counties, just 7 have formal cooperation agreements under a program called 287G, says Merkway.
There was a 2022 ACLU report kind of highlighting how existing voluntary ICE sheriff cooperation programs, particularly the 287G program, have a long history as a vehicle for racism and targeting of immigrant communities, despite, you know, being advertised as, you know, needed for public safety. They can actually have the opposite effect and keep communities less safe.
She adds that what's lost in the debate is the terror this sends to communities.
It's just terrifying, kind of how, what a slippery slope, just small statutory changes that could, you know, have an enormous impact on the safety of immigrants and non-immigrants alike.
The bill still has yet to receive a full vote in the state assembly, and a sister bill in the state Senate is waiting in committee. Governor Evers says he'll veto the bill. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Shayna Clark.
That is WORT's Shayna Clark, and Shayna is a new reporter here at WORT. That was her first story for us. As we heard from her story, a number of groups oppose this bill, including, as we heard, the ACLU, Voces de la Frontera, and WEAC, the Wisconsin Education Association Council. Also opposed is the Wisconsin Council of Churches, and joining me on the line now is Reverend Carrie Parker. She's Executive Director of the Wisconsin Council of Churches. Good morning, Reverend Parker.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me this morning and waking up early. Can you tell me why you oppose this bill?
There are multiple reasons why we oppose AB 24. One of the core reasons has to do with our beliefs on nonviolence. They call us to work for the dignity and civil rights of all persons. And when you take a look at this bill, the legislation here keys in on some racial disparities, and it really invites some targeting of Black, Brown, immigrant, and Indigenous residents of Wisconsin and visitors to our state in a way that's really harmful to dignity and civil rights.
Absolutely. And you write about that in your statement in opposition. You also write that studies have found when local law enforcement officers are required to investigate and interpret complex federal immigration laws, something that is beyond their training and ordinary duties, there is a greater risk of racial profiling. Can you talk about the studies that you're referencing?
Well, you know, this is not necessarily my wheelhouse. You know, I'm a pastor, a preacher, a teacher, but what it's important to remember is we all have our roles in creating a humane, civil, just society. And we want sheriffs focused on certain things. We want people tasked with certain laws focused on certain things. And anytime we stretch people beyond their original roles, we're increasing the risk of mistakes being made. And people get caught up in mistakes all the time. The way this bill is written increases the risk that somebody could be five steps down the road to deportation before these mistakes are caught. And that's really harmful to our communities.
So you are executive director of the Wisconsin Council of Churches. Can you tell me who you represent and the communities that are on board with you in opposing this bill?
We have 23 different Christian traditions that are members of the council. So it's a pretty broad swath of Wisconsin. It's about 2,000 congregations across the state that are members of the council through our structure. So it's everybody from mainline churches to Orthodox churches to historically Black congregations. And These churches, through their membership, have all agreed on statements about nonviolence, statements about racial injustice, statements about immigrant neighbors. And to be able to come together and say nobody should have to live in fear because of who they are, what their status is, what their skin color is, what accent they may have. That's really critical to us as people of faith and part of the biblical stories that we all share that are foundational to our faith.
Mm. Well, what do you think is next for this bill? As we said in the story, you know, the governor says essentially that he'll veto it. So what is the value to an organization like yours against legislation like this?
We believe in showing up. The importance is not just the end outcome of the bill, whether it gets approved or not, but the messages that are out in the public sphere in the process of considering the bill. What are we saying to our immigrant neighbors, to our Indigenous residents, to people who have an accent, who are naturalized citizens? What are we saying about the welcome we provide? And what due process we're going to give, what we expect of one another in considering one another as residents or giving people a fair shake. And if we are not voicing those things in the process of considering a bill, then somebody needs to do that, and we're here to offer a moral voice.
Yeah. So there are two kind of parts to the bill. One is to require documents that prove citizenship, which as someone who didn't always have a birth certificate or a documentation, like even I got trapped in trying to get a driver's license, and I'm someone with privilege, right? There's another aspect to this bill, which is to cooperate with ICE, essentially. As we heard in the story, Dane and Milwaukee counties are listed as non-cooperative institutions. Can you, or the sheriff, sorry, can you talk about the role of ICE right now? ICE has historically avoided some places that are deemed sacred or off limits by our society. That too seems to be changing under the Trump administration. There's new guidance that ICE can now enter schools, hospitals, and churches. Talk about that.
We have had so many conversations with pastors, other church leaders, congregants, with the increased level of fear about whether it is okay to go to church, hold events where people can get meals or clothing or health care. Do we have to lock the doors of the church, Pastor? Do church leaders have to step down from leadership positions because it might be dangerous for them to be out front right now? All of these conversations are happening in churches. People are deeply anxious, and people shouldn't have to be that afraid to go to church.
Yeah.
To practice their faith.
Can you talk more about the training or preparation that are part of these conversations? I know there are a bevy of organizations holding Know Your Rights workshops and seminars. What kind of practical things after the conversations are you doing?
There's a whole other layer for churches when you think about how many of us learned to live stream our worship services during COVID. When we talk about our role in being welcoming and hospitable and how that's part of our values, how do we say, yes, we're welcoming and hospitable, but if you're coming here to detain someone among us, you are not welcome, right? And dealing with all of those nuances, it's a really fraught time for churches. So we've consulted with immigrant service organizations. We've consulted with our friends at the ACLU. And we've had lots of one-on-one conversations because every church is unique in their composition, their sets of services, and how they might consider their willingness to risk, their ability to risk, based on who is among them.
Reverend Parker, before we let you go, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about any other bills in the state legislature or federal legislation or executive orders that you're also keeping an eye on right now.
We are paying attention to anything that targets vulnerable people.
That's a lot right now.
It is an awful lot right now. But that's at the core of who we are. We talk about our values as courage and justice and holy imagination. And we intend to be present for the people who are afraid so they don't have to stand alone.
All right. Well, Reverend Carrie Parker, I want to thank you for your time this morning. Thanks for joining us here on the Tuesday 8 o'clock Buzz.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you.
Thank you. Reverend Parker is the executive director of the Wisconsin Council of Churches, which represents 21 Christian traditions, which have within them thousands of congregations and over 1 million church members. It's one of the handful of groups opposed to Assembly Bill 24. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with Rachel O'Leary Carmona. She's executive director of the Women's March. She'll be speaking with us in advance of a rally at the state capitol today at 2 p.m. As we kick off Women's History Month. But we'll be back shortly before that to ask for your support to the WRT Winter Fundraiser. It's 8:34. You're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock Buzz. For some music. I am.
up, feminine libation. My gosh, we raise you. Please sympathize all the lies we raise you. Please realize all the time. Family energy, drank a couple quarters on my chorus, then I code up. Hey. If I wrote the word, money stacks for all my daughters. Hey. Never ask for payment in the womb, times nine. Now we see the blood on the street, times try. Feminine energy, balance up the indestructible in the vaginal. Heaven in thine, heaven is mine. Spiritual, lyrical, mother sang sweetest taboo, rickle kind. If I was astonished by the level of shame, feminine energy, energy rain. Intuition and ambition, intuition shine. Intuition and ambition running through my veins. Pour out the love, let the healing begin. The birds and the bees.
I beg you, listen me. I beg you, open your ears for any waiting that they say. Waiting that they talk. A serious talk at they talk. Go. No bit langa here speaking. Listen. In this world we deal, member say ya, one day go come, when we all go go. Before long, we go meet Mama Godo. When we dey meet Mama Godo, tell me, waiting, you go see.
It's 8:37. You're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Shally Pittman filling in for Tara Wilhelmy. And this, our only fundraiser of the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz, is only fundraiser of the Wart Winter fundraiser, which is going for a couple more days yet. Our goal this morning is to have two new or increasing monthly donors and to have one first-time donor give to WORT, become WORT, and join our family. We kicked off the show today talking with John and Kathy Miner about how they are family, and they're here in community with Tara and all the fabulous folks that she brings in. You know, Tara has been bringing in all sorts of folks from all over Madison and beyond in her series of entrepreneurship interviews. I've really appreciated hearing from Jaden Wynn and hearing Tara go to the Sun Prairie at MLK Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration as part of our slate of MLK programming. She's done all sorts of really cool recorded bits in the community, and then she's brought that back here to air on WORT and go out over the very powerful transmitter of our of WORT. And so I think that's really cool. I hope you do too. I hope you enjoy listening to this show. If you're spending time listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz, whether you're in the car or waking up, John wakes up at like 5 in the morning. So he's already well prepared before he gets in. But if you're a little bit of a later riser, maybe you listen to the buzz on your way to work, then I hope you show your support and give to WORT. It takes people like you. We have thousands of donors, but we have people giving, you know, $30 a month or $15 a month, as well as our one-time donors during the pledge drives. And it takes all of you to operate WORT and allow us to continue broadcasting and allow us to continue broadcasting from all sorts of communities around Madison. So the ways to give: online at wortfm.org. There you can make a direct donation. If you have your debit card out, you can do it there. You can be like Kate from Madison, who gave to support this show and our early morning classical music, right? It all kind of blends together. You have Pete Haney in the other studio right before the show. I love his show. I love the folks that he brings in. And then we transition into waking up a little bit and having a little more energy. No play on that song at all. And then we get into some folk music. It's a great morning lineup here on WORT. And
and we'd love your support to continue doing it. You can also call 608-256-2001. That's the number to call. You'll talk with Cynthia and with...
Kathy.
Thank you.
Not sure who else is out there, actually.
There might be other folks. I was checking to see if there were any other phone answers out there. Doug, perhaps, if we get overloaded. Let's try to get a grand slam. 608-256-2001. That's the number to call. But, of course, the reason that you give to WORT is you want to sustain our operations here at the station and allow us to continue going for another 50 years. I don't even... looking at all the things that WORT can do in the future, it's kind of incredible. We have a task force on the future. We're launching a listener survey. We want to hear also what you want from your station. Now, a direct and easy way to do that anecdotally is to also just give a comment when you're giving to WORT. We are required to read all the comments on the air unless they're offensive, and that's highlighted in bright green on our web pledge report. Again, want to thank Kate from Madison, 608-256-2001, or online at WORTFM.org. We do have a variety of thank you gifts available, and you can see those online on the WORT website when you go to wortfm.org/donate, or Cynthia and Kathy can read them to you when you call them at 608-256-2001. There are a variety of gifts. I feel like the number of gifts that we have available is growing because there's kind of everything, John. I don't know if you've noticed. There's the I Miss Nixon bumper sticker. There's the WORT patch. There's the cross body bag, which I have seen some folks wear in a very stylish way. Let's just put it that way.
Which, as Mel and Floyd would note, is not a body bag. That's a different thing.
Yes, no, we don't, you know, maybe that's a future premium, though.
They did give away those Tyvek suits from...
I would kind of love a body, you know, that would actually be kind of nice. At the $100 level, and Kate from, Kate picked this up online, is the long sleeve t-shirt, and this is a design from 1980 that we are finally printing, John, that we didn't do for... You know, what is that, 45 years? So I'm glad to see it get its due. And this is special to this drive. That's at the $100 level. We also have umbrellas, backpacks, headphones, all sorts of things available at different levels. And again, you can get the full listing online at WORTFM.org/donate or by calling 608-256-2001. And we're going to trust that you're giving or that you're considering it as we move on to our next segment with Rachel O'Leary Carmona, Executive Director of the Women's March. So this afternoon, protesters will gather at the state capitol for the Women's March during this first week of Women's History Month. And this rally has a political tone. Rally goers will be there to push for the election of Dane County Judge Susan Crawford to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. She's facing Brad Schimmel in the April 1st election, which is coming up in less than a month now. So joining me on the air is Rachel O'Leary Carmona, Executive Director of the Women's March. Good morning, Ms. O'Leary Carmona.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. So let's get right to it. Tell us about the march this afternoon. It starts at 2 p.m.
So, yeah, today is a rally, and we're going to be, you know, talking to folks here in Madison, which, by the way, I am a native Wisconsin. I went to school here, graduated in 2002, so happy to be back here. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to be rallying because reproductive freedom is on, you know, the line in the ballot again, and doctors, including the lead plaintiff in the legal challenge to the ban here, as well as nurses, healthcare providers, you know, folks all across Wisconsin are coming together to highlight the role that this Supreme Court election will play in protecting abortion access, but also just all the things. I mean, we see the direction that the country is going in right now, and what we need is more democracy and not less, and that is here what we are fighting for.
So that'll be at the State Street steps. Are you planning to stay there or move down State Street?
I think we are planning to stay there. I am not positive about that. I think it's going, you know, there's with things like this, there's always a little bit of a play it by ear, you know, as it pertains to like crowd size and everything. So
yeah,
I think we'll stay there though.
Absolutely. I only ask because we get calls asking where is the protest now? So it'd be nice to tell people exactly where you are at 2 p.m. So is this presented with other organizations or is this a rally that's really coming from the Women's March Network?
Oh, no, we are doing this absolutely in collaboration with other organizations and specifically SEIU, Wisconsin, service care workers, union members across the state. Are folks who are taking a lead role here, but there are other organizations who have been working and fighting for reproductive rights in Wisconsin who are also, pushing inside of this coalition either right now or historically. So, you know, folks we have worked with is obviously Planned Parenthood here in Wisconsin, Working Families Party, our own folks who work here with different formations. We run a decentralized network, so we don't have chapters. So those folks are usually active inside of different networks. And so there is a large coalition of folks, including obviously, WISDOMS and folks like that who have been active on this issue.
So as you mentioned in your answer a few minutes ago, this is a march for a variety of state and national causes right now, but most directly you're advocating for Susan Crawford for the state Supreme Court. She faces conservative Brad Schimmel in the Supreme Court election on, no joke, April 1st. So why is this a women's issue?
I mean, I would say... I guess I would say that at the end of the day, I mean, I think that, it's very easy to say, well, you know, the Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin is driven by issues of abortion access and reproductive freedom, and that reproductive freedom is something that's a women's issue. But I actually reject that. I think that reproductive freedom and the decision to... the ability to decide how and when to have a family is actually something that impacts everybody. Mm. I think that that decision, along with bodily autonomy, is the cornerstone to a free and functioning democracy, actually. And so I think that this issue would be, it's really easy to say that, this is a women's issue, and so women should get out and do X, Y, or Z. But I think that it impacts all of us. As we've seen, I'm from Wisconsin. I lived here for most of my life and went to school here, but I live in Texas now. And in Texas, there were a number of folks who sued the state because they were in the midst of pregnancies that they wanted. They were trying to grow their families, and they were denied life-saving, in some instances, reproductive functioning saving health care because there was abortion ban on the books and the doctors weren't able to intervene. And some of those women nearly lost their lives. They had to leave cross state lines to go get health care. Some of them did, in fact, lose the ability to have kids. And so, that impacts them, that impacts their families, that impacts their siblings, that impacts the entire trajectory of families. And so I think that, for us, this is an issue of democracy because you cannot practice democracy and you can't be inside of a society where the fundamental unit of change is one person and where half of those one people in the United States, don't have control over their lives or their bodies.
Yeah, as it's in the definition, it's all about the choice, having the ability to make the choice, regardless of your personal opinion on abortion. So you live in Texas now, but you're from Wisconsin and from Madison. I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about, in this moment that we're in, where we're seeing the federal government sort of being stripped of a lot of power and, people, quite literally. Can you talk about the importance of state-level action in the Trump administration? It seems like it makes the states even more important. And President Trump himself has said that he wants to take abortion and take it back to the states.
I mean, when President Trump says that he wants to take abortion back to the states, what he means is that he wants a national abortion ban. But we can, you know, what that's code for is taking it back to the states. But fundamentally, taking it back to the states is a real, it's a real challenge and a disservice. It of course, it means the state level advocacy is really important. And I'm never going to say, that's a bad thing. But what it does mean is that then some people, I live in Texas. So some people don't have access to health care, and then some people do. And that is the actual definition of what Roe talked about when they talked about undue burden of, you know, is there an undue burden placed upon certain people based on geography? And of course, in our country, you can't talk about geography place without talking about race and class. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are certain places in the South, for example, where most of the, you know, Black folks live, most of the, Latinos and specifically Mexicans live in border states, with other populations of Latinos living in, like, you know, New York, for example, or the East Coast. But their race is tied to place in our country. Race is tied to class in our country. Place is tied to class in our country. And so I think that it's really, a proxy way of saying without saying that, you know, we're going to, for it, it is a continued assault on the rights of working class people, of middle class people, of poor people of color, because the folks who are demographically in the states that are able to protect us are also demographically in the states that they were able to hop on a flight to another state or to another country, in fact, to get the care that they need. So I think that, again, this is about equal access under the law. This is about avoiding undue burden. But this is also just about, it's really funny. I was having an argument with somebody I know who is a Trump supporter, thankfully not a Trump voter, or I wouldn't be able to talk to them probably. And, they were talking about, you know, getting back to this, you know, this time, of course, the Make America Great Again. The idea was that, you know, somehow all of these bans took us back to a time where we were more free. And I guess I just don't understand that, you know, like for me, this is just about needing to be very clear. Our rights are under assault and we need to do what we can at the state level, at the city level. Obviously, the federal level is captured for right now. But at the city, the state, even the regional level, thinking about how states could band together, Wisconsin and, you know, Minnesota, for example, like what kind of resources could we, could we work to drive in a cross-state collaboration? I don't know. But, you know, these are the things that I think that we have to be thinking about when we think about the practice of democracy moving forward, because it is not enough for us to kind of just get fired up every 2 years or even every 4 years for a presidential campaign, because trickle-down organizing doesn't work any better than trickle-down economics did.
It's really fascinating that you had that conversation. I think one thing that gets lost is there are marches, and we are talking ahead of a march on the state capitol today at 2:00. But can you talk about the other work of organizing that you do as part of the Women's March Network? I think a lot of that is having conversations with people and not shutting people out of your circle. Can you talk to that?
100%. And before I go any further, I'll say Women's March Network is, you know, the organizing arm for Women's March, but we also have a 501c4 vehicle, which is a political vehicle called just Women's March. And then we have a super PAC that makes the endorsements or does overtly political work. So all three of those vehicles are moving in different ways on the different bodies of work that I'm talking about. So all of that is to say that we both get people. Our role is that we understand that there's a large ecosystem of folks who are doing work to get people involved in political homes in order to make you know, progressive change. And we, you know, do our best to not duplicate any of that. And so our goal is to get people off the couch. We know that, you know, Donald Trump got whatever percentage that he got in this past election. Kamala Harris got whatever percentage that he got. But those percentages were both significantly down from 2020. So we know that people across demographics stayed home, just didn't vote. Eligible voters who are registered and a lot of people who didn't register. And so our goal is to incite people into action for the first time. And so that is kind of our mobilizing arm. And then once we get people into action, we organize them into different places. And sometimes that's moving them into bodies of work that our partners are moving. And sometimes that's some of our own work. Our mobilizations are usually quite large, and so we could not take all of the people who are, you know, active for the first time. And so we actually need both of those things to happen to you know, get people active inside of political homes. So what we do inside of our ongoing work is we have a group of women's protection teams that really talk about what safety looks like. And I don't mean that from a security standpoint, but how do we provide, you know, how do we have de-escalation trainings? How do we keep each other safe emotionally? How do we think about situational awareness when we're going into a thing, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Some of those safety teams have undergone some extra training with women's protection teams. Like literally, how do we, you know, like with self-defense, like how do we keep ourselves physically safe? How are we constantly aware of a situation? But if a situation goes south, like how do we, you know, how do we defend ourselves and exit the situation as quickly as possible? More women than ever, I think. There's been like a 4,600% rise in misogyny online. More women than ever talking about feeling unsafe in person. Obviously, we've seen attacks on women, you know, places like town halls where they're just talking. And so more than ever, women are thinking about, okay, how do we stay, you know, safe? How do we keep our allies safe? We also have Digital Defenders, which is our online program that teaches folks how to essentially organize their networks online. So it's not a specific campaign, but rather when we think about misinformation and disinformation, obviously we've seen a lot of both, increasing amounts of both in our country. Over the last few years, particularly around this administration. And we think about it in three ways. One, institutions. And we've seen, you know, institutions roll back on this. We've seen Meta saying, oh, we're not going to do fact-checking anymore. You know, all of these things. Twitter obviously did that a while ago. So there's the role that institutions play. There's the role that individuals play. When you look at media, you say, hey, does this seem real? Maybe I should go fact-check this, whatever. But then there's also the biggest role that is obviously that is actually sometimes the invisible role, which is we're interacting with people in these networks all day long. We all check probably 2 to 3, maybe even more platforms that we're on. Maybe we're on TikTok, Reddit, you know, we're on whatever. And so when people send us something, organizing them into recognizing and pushing back against misinformation and disinformation and serving as an organizer inside of your network that you just live and breathe in already is actually a role that most of us don't think about playing and really need to be better skilled at. And so we're skilling folks up to how to organize inside of those spaces.
Rachel, I'm so sorry. We have about a minute left in the program. So I want to thank you so much for coming on. And I want you to give you like 10 seconds to talk about 2 and 3 in your point.
2 and 3 in the point of...
Okay, sorry, we have about a minute left. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. Any last words for today's rally at 2 p.m.?
Oh, yes. I think just come out. Just get in where you fit in. Now is the time to be involved in political homes. So just find a place, find a cause that you believe in and get to fighting for it. It's really that simple. We can't fight fascism alone. So find some folks and go fight fascism together with them.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Rachel O'Leary Carmona is executive director of the Women's March in advance of a rally this afternoon at 2 p.m. That starts at the State Street steps on the state capitol. And with 30 seconds in the show, that does it. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz here on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I want to thank our donors during the hour during the winter fundraiser, Kate from Madison, and also a new donor, or not new donor, but another donor. this morning, Leslie called in from Madison. Leslie didn't want to pick up a thank you gift, but she did want to say that her favorite WORT shows is everything on WORT. And she particularly says, in honor, this pledge is in honor of everyone who ever got up early to go on the, I can't read that handwriting, to go on and get up in the morning from the breakfast special to the 8 o'clock buzz. And I want to, you know, say thank you to Leslie for her donation. You can keep those pledges and donations coming at 608-256-2001 or online at WORTFM.org. Thanks to host Tara Wilhelmi. Thanks to John Miner and Kathy Miner and Cynthia. Most of all, thank you for spending your morning with us here on Community Radio and showing up and supporting community grassroots radio. Coming up next is 3 hours of folk music. Show them some love for all that you hear on Tuesday mornings. We'll be at you next week. Thanks always for listening to The Buzz here on WRT Madison.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Tuesday, March 4th.
This is Bird Note. When biologist Danielle Whitaker started studying bird odors, some scientists tried to discourage her. They repeated an old myth: birds can't smell. But that only deepened her curiosity.
When I first heard the idea that birds didn't have a sense of smell, they suddenly became this mysterious puzzle I had to study.
She was drawn further into the world of bird scent when she caught a whiff of her favorite bird, the brown-headed cowbird.
The first time I caught a brown-headed cowbird,